Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, you're now listening to Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanisan. As interest rates have come down, many retirees have seen a reduction in their annual income as fixed deposit income has fallen. Today, I explore ways to manage this situation, as well as whether dividend stocks or even EPF are still viable options. To help me with this, I speak to Felix Neo, Director of Financial Planning at FinWealth Management. Felix, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roshan. Thanks for having me.
So Felix, if I'm retired and my retirement income is funded by interest from fixed deposits, I have probably seen my annual income be cut in half right now. What should I do about this?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, and a question that I'm actually being asked quite a lot by clients, as well as people that I come across. And it's quite unfortunate. You know, on one hand, the borrowers are very happy, jumping for joy almost. The interest rates have actually come down. The cost of borrowing has come down. But at the very same vein, those who are actually dependent on FD, for the interest to cover their expenses, they are the ones who are actually, having a bit of a crunch in that sense, right? So in actual fact, what one should do if you are in that situation is really to see if there are ways for you to either, number one, increase your income, or number two, reduce your expenses. So let me go into more detail with that, right? So ways to increase your income. You need to look to see whether or not there's an opportunity for you to find some higher yielding investment assets, right? And for those who might be recent retirees, the question, I suppose, is it possible for you to take on some part-time work, some consultancy in the area of your expertise, right? Or can you participate in the gig economy? If you're able to, bring in some income to supplement the loss of FD interest, that will be, one way of helping you tide through the current situation. So that's as far as income goes. And then the next question is, when you're looking at expenses, are there areas that you can actually reduce given the current environment, right? Now, of course, top of anyone's head at this point in time would be holidays, for example. If you had already factored in holidays, holidays are almost out of the question. So that's one way you'll be able to reduce your expenses. But what about other ways of reducing expenses? So look through your expenses, your monthly budget, your expenses, and look at especially things that you are actually spending on so-called automatically, i.e. subscriptions. Look at those that you have, right, in terms of subscriptions, and see whether or not there's any way to try and reduce that. I suppose after looking at trying to increase the income or reduce expenses, what else is there to do? I suppose you should be looking at, I believe you would have already done that, would be to see if there are any applicable government assistance under the Bantuan Prihatin packages, right? So I won't go into detail about that, but the idea here is if there is something that's applicable to you, go for it, right? Because there are central government, the federal, benefits, as well as local state benefits that have actually been so-called announced by the respective governments as well, right? And the last thing I would say is that if you find yourself still, having a bit of a shortfall as far as cash flow goes, right, then you should, and there's nothing really wrong in terms of looking at your current so-called investment principle, be it through FDs or your, any of your investment monies. If you are sitting on some profits for your investments, or if you still have EPF balances, you might, have to consider utilizing some of those to help you through over this period of time.
Felix, what options do retirees have if they want to move their money into other assets?
I think in terms of assets that will give a slightly better yield for retirees, considering the current environment, but still not too high risk, right, given that they are retirees, there are a few options. I wouldn't say that there are plenty, but there are a few options. So I'm going to get into that in a moment, but I would just want to make a quick mention about this. Very often, people get into this reactive mode, if you like, right? Or trying to firefight, you know, whenever the problem comes up. My FD interest has come down. I need to do something. I would say that that's just a symptom, you know, if you like, in terms of the problem, the overall problem, because what you should really have is a bigger strategy in place, right? You should actually have an idea or an inclination in terms of what is your ideal strategy as an allocation, right? If you have that and you suddenly are faced with this kind of environment, you then have a better position to know, because this is your ideal strategy asset allocation, therefore, this is the better way in terms of moving your assets, right? So I would encourage everyone, right, to give some thought in terms of your ideal strategy asset allocation, which is going to be in line with your risk profile or your risk appetite. Now, having said that, once you've have a better idea in terms of, you know, how much should you have in low risk assets, how much should you have in moderate risk assets, how much should you have in high risk assets. So let's zoom in terms of the low risk assets, right? Because, you know, retirees and what have you. So when you actually look at that, well, there are some banks who have what they call the golden years, so-called kind of FD rates. Unfortunately, I think at this juncture, no bank is going to be giving too much in terms of higher FD rates for senior citizens, right? So while that FD and, you know, liquid cash is still required simply because you need funds to pay for your immediate expenses and what have you, you might want to look for other things apart from that. So what are the other instruments that may likely be applicable or relevant, right? One of it is, for example, bonds, right? So bonds, there are two ways that you can actually access bonds. One is directly through a retail bond. That means you're buying the bonds directly from the issuer through an intermediary, of course, right? But let's say if you find that buying bonds directly and not having to choose the bonds on your own or through intermediary is a bit of a chore, to be able to build up a portfolio of bonds, then you could also opt for bond funds. Now, bond funds, they are obviously a collective investment scheme, right? So quite a number of people will be investing in, you know, a fairly large fund size. Then what's going to happen is that, you know, given the current environment, the expected returns, as I, you know, understand from my discussions with the fund managers, is anywhere, you know, 4 to 6%, perhaps, in terms of the annual expected return, which is actually quite decent, you know, given the current environment. So that's another avenue. Obviously, some people are talking about, you know, defensive, so-called blue chip kind of stocks, or perhaps investing in REITs. That is another good avenue. Now, just a very quick mention about REITs. I think everybody is well aware that with MCO, if the portfolio of REITs in the fund is very heavy towards those retail REITs, then you might, you know, not be getting the type of income that the REIT is expecting, right? So there will be some kind of a knock-on effect from the MCO, right? But having said that, under normal circumstances, REITs is quite a good income yielding investment instrument, right? So that will be another alternative. Defensive blue chip stocks, again, is also one of those that you can consider.
Right, Felix. So one thing with the bond funds, we should be paying attention to the fees that are incurred as well, right? Because fees can eat into your returns.
Exactly. So when it comes to bond funds, what is good in the market nowadays is the majority of bond funds that are available in the market does not charge an initial upfront service charge, right? But you do need to look at the annual, what we call the annual management fees, right? So you're right, Roshan, it would actually eat into the returns, but they tend to be below the 1% mark, 1% or less. So in that sense, the 4 to 6% that I had mentioned very loosely, right, in terms of expected returns, is actually net of fees, right? So in that sense, you still get a slightly better return compared to FDs.
Felix, on that note, we're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, we'll talk about high dividend stocks. Are they a good place at this point? And whether EPF is still an option if you're retired. You're listening to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for staying with us here on Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanesan. I'm speaking with Felix Neo this morning, Director of Financial Planning at FinWealth Management, about how to manage the reduced fixed deposit income that a lot of retirees are depending upon. Felix, we were talking about some blue chips a little earlier. Now, one of the things that's obviously talked about quite a bit are high dividend yielding stocks. Now, obviously, that's a bit of a volatile situation considering the current macroeconomic situation. But what are your thoughts on high dividend stocks at this point?
I think high dividend yielding stocks is definitely worth considering. However, you must bear in mind, historical dividend track record is, at the end of the day, historical. So what you will notice, especially if you just take some of the banks as an example, not Malaysian banks, touch wood at this point in time, but if you look at UK banks, for example, quite a number of banks, even US banks, have actually either reduced or suspended dividend payments given the effects of coronavirus, COVID-19 on the economy, right? Then there is another set of so-called dividend-yielding stocks, high dividend-yielding stocks, such as those in the healthcare line. Think of your glove makers today. If you've been reading the headlines, you'll know that glove makers in Malaysia are basically, you know, have actually had a very high run-up in terms of their share prices. So what that means is that although the share price is great, but when it comes to a dividend yield on the high share price, you're going to have a much lower dividend yield, right? So I think in a nutshell, looking at high dividend stocks does make sense, but you do need to do some study to ensure that the type of stocks that you're buying is able to sustain and continue its high dividend yielding history or track record. And if you find the whole process of actually evaluating and looking for those high dividend stocks on your own a little bit tedious, then what I would suggest that you do is consider looking at high dividend yielding funds, right? That means the strategy of the fund will be focused on investing in high dividend yielding stocks. That could be another approach instead.
Right, because always going through a fund allows you to automatically diversify the risk of buying one high dividend yielding stock that may or may not see its stock price and dividend yield fluctuate.
Exactly. And I just want to quickly mention also that does it mean that dividend yielding stocks or high dividend yielding stocks are not subject to the market environment? You know, a market volatility that we're seeing now? And the answer is a most definite no, right? You might actually, you know, get a good dividend, right? But you must also be mindful of the value of your investment, i.e. the share price, right? Right now, you have a mixed bag, right? As I mentioned, I think Malaysian stock market has actually experienced a bit of a bullish run. You know, in line with quite a number of other markets as well, you know, and that's why this whole discussion about a U-shaped curve, a V-shaped curve, recovery and what have you, right? But at the end of the day, you must be very aware of the fact that you are still invested in the stock market. And what that means is that you might have a very good company on hand, right, that's able to pay good dividends, but they are subject to the market conditions. And if the market sentiments are such that, you know, it is not going to be good on the share price, then the share price of good dividend yielding stocks would also take a hit.
Yeah, and I actually had an episode a few weeks back with Joyce Chua, CEO of Success Concepts, which we will link in the description. Essentially, we're talking about the risk with value traps when it comes to dividend yielding companies. So while the dividend yield may look attractive, there may be other signs you need to pay attention to. A high dividend yield is not equal across all companies. And like you said, Felix, this is all based on historical past performance. We have no idea what dividend payout ratios are going to be like going forward. So when it comes to any type of return, it's really subject to the risk-reward ratio, right? Or that calculation there. So with a fixed deposit, your capital is guaranteed and you get maybe 2% per annum. And then some dividend stocks are giving maybe 4%. But is it worth paying that additional 2% for that volatility in the market and the potential of losing your capital? I think this is a very important question that people need to ask themselves, right?
Yes, definitely. So basically, you want to chase the yield, but yield is not the only thing that you have to be mindful of. You have to look at the total returns at the end of the day. That means whatever dividend that you might get from that stock, plus whether or not you're experiencing a capital appreciation or depreciation as a result of the stock price coming down. So you do need to mention to look at the so-called overall total return.
Right, because there's no point really if you chase the dividend yield and then your capital amount starts to, and you lose money on the capital.
Exactly.
Felix, let's talk about EPF right now. Is that still an option for me if I'm already retired?
I think if you're already retired, I believe there is a certain age you know, that you can continue to contribute you know, actively. So as long as you know, you are within that age, then it's fine. But if you have funds in EPF, my best advice to you is please don't make drastic all or nothing type of decisions, right? If you want to withdraw funds from EPF, you can withdraw some of your funds from EPF, but don't withdraw all. Why? Because the EPF is still, you know, looking like it is in a position to pay a fairly decent return. So definitely, you know, is EPF an option? Definitely for those who are having funds with EPF, you might be able to do voluntary contributions for EPF, right? But there's a limit to that as well. It's only 60,000 maximum per year, right? So don't rush. I do know of quite a number of clients who, for various reasons, the very minute that they can withdraw all their EPF funds, they did that. And a few years later, what they felt or what they found was obviously a little bit of regret, and then they wanted to put back money into the EPF, but they were limited to the maximum of 60,000 a year.
So, Felix, overall then, should I just ignore everything, keep with my current plan that I already have, and maybe just start drawing down on the capital that I have in the fixed deposits to compensate for that loss of income?
I think that is definitely an option. What you should be doing is to evaluate all the options that are available to you, you know, before you actually make that decision. But, you know, withdrawing part of your capital is not unusual, right? There is this so-called retirement rule, if you like, right? What they call the safe withdrawal rule, a 4% you know, rule, where you should be able to sustain the funds, right? If you withdraw 4% of, you know, your capital on the annual basis, right? On the first year of retirement, if you like, and then subsequent years, take the same amount and adjust it for inflation, right? Now, having said that, you do need to be mindful of all the variables in the sense that you also have to look at all the other investments that you might have available, right? So that you don't make a decision on withdrawing capital, but in actual fact, you might actually have other sources of funding elsewhere, right? Now, very briefly, one thing that I didn't mention earlier in terms of avenues, you know, that a retiree could actually also access higher yielding assets would be obviously if, you know, you're dealing, for our so-called Bumiputra clients or even, you know, those in the audience, you should be actually trying to maximize all the so-called fixed priced funds by Amana Saham, you know, PNB, that's another avenue to you. Unfortunately, not all of us are able to access that. So what you might find is that you can consider, right, especially, you know, if you find that you're not an EPF member and you still want to get some EPF, you know, type of returns. And so what can you do? I think one option is, and again, I will say this very carefully, but one option is, you know, could you actually have a joint account, or could you actually use, you know, your children's, you know, names or accounts and all that to be able to access those type of investments to get that kind of return, right? So the reason why I say it very cautiously is simply because, you know, the funds will be in someone else's name, right? Your relative, your next of kin, right? So whether or not you're comfortable with that, if you are, then that is another option for you perhaps to be able to access a better yield given the current conditions.
Right. Essentially, there's always going to be a risk with all these different options. And if you don't want to have the risk, what you're going to have is that that reduced income level. Going back to the option of not doing anything, essentially, Felix, so that really comes down to your lifespan, correct? Because you're going to have enough money, yes, for a certain number of years, and you don't want to end up in a situation where, unless you're very sure of your expected life lifespan, you don't want to end up at a point where you are out of money.
Correct.
Felix, on that note, I'd like to thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Roshan.
I was speaking to Felix Neo, Director of Financial Planning at Finn Wealth Management. This was Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Karnason for BFM 89.9.
Ringgit & Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.